Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for MacBreak Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is MacBreak Weekly, episode 281, recorded January 10th, 2012, live from CES. MacBreak Weekly is brought to you by GoToMyPC. Take care of last-minute requests from anywhere right from your iPhone with GoToMyPC for the iPhone. Visit GoToMyPC.com for your free 30-day trial. Use the offer code MacBreak. And by Carbonite Online Backup. Automatic, continuous, and unlimited backup for your computer files, only $59 a year. Try it free at Carbonite.com. Use the offer code MacBreak and get 2 bonus months with purchase. And by Ford. Featuring voice-activated Sync App Link. Now you can control select smartphone apps with your voice, so you keep your hands on the wheel and your eyes on the road. Check it out in the 2012 Ford Fiesta and at Ford.com/technology.
It's time for MacBreak Weekly, the show that covers the latest Apple news, in this case, live from CES 2012, where there is no Apple news. Somebody made a very big mistake here. Good news, we got a great panel. I'm going to start all the way to the left with Leander Cani from cultofmac.com. Leander, great to see you. Why do you come to CES? There's no Apple news here.
Oh, I beg to differ. Apple's not here, but everybody else has got Apple products.
All right. We'll talk about it in just a second. Alex Lindsay has actually brought some products, in fact, some fun stuff to play with, including a Thunderbolt drive.
I like drives.
Alex Lindsay from PixelCore.com and PixelCore.tv. Sarah Lane is also here from iPad Today and Tech News Today. Hi, Sarah.
Hi, Leo.
We're going to do iPad Today here
on Thursday.
Thursday.
We're going to walk the iLounge.
28,000 square feet of iPod cases.
Yeah, it's a lot bigger than last year. So,
that's huge.
But there's more than just iPod cases, thank goodness.
I hope so. Also here from Cult of Mac, Irfan Elijah. It's good to see you, Irfan.
Nice to see you again.
I don't know if you've been on the show before, but have we met in person? I don't think.
We have met in person. We danced together at South by Southwest.
That was
I got
so
photos
much fun.
Of it.
Yeah.
Apparently, I didn't
really
do a good
drunk.
Job. Yeah, I think you were a little.
We danced together?
Yeah, we actually went like this. Dun, 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 dun.
Really?
Yeah, I have pictures of it. I'd love to send those to you.
Please, yeah. Just put them up
to Sarah.
In a
she'll
public liquor set, please.
Okay, I'll do
so
that.
We can all enjoy it.
So, Leander, why is this a good show for an Apple blog like Cult of Mac? Although, by the way, you're branching out with Cult of Mac.
Right, yeah.
It's more than Mac, baby.
Right, Android now, too.
Cult of Android.
Right.
Are you going to shave Android into the back of your head? Put a little robot?
Unfortunately, I don't have enough hair.
Too late, huh?
Too late now. Maybe I'll stick it on.
Now, do the Apple fanboys say, oh, you're apostate now?
Yeah, you know, we are running a risk of alienating, I hate to say, a small part of our audience, probably a big part of our audience, with doing this. But, you know, we've been getting these debates. Every time we talked about Android in a news story, there would be... We get a lot of Android fans coming in and debating this stuff on Cult of Mac, so it made total sense. It was just like the old days of the Windows versus Mac,
right.
PC wars.
It is exactly like that, for anybody who lived through that.
Right, yeah. It's Redux. It's exactly the same stuff again. I mean, it's a very, very...
Even down to market share and all of this stuff.
Right,
Apple has huge market share right now, but at some point, I think... Android's going to become the Windows.
Yeah, and they debate the same sort of stuff, you know, like the availability of software, which one's a better platform, which one does this better, which one does that better.
Yeah. Cool. Is that cultofandroid.com?
Cultofandroid.com.
Well done. No, I think that's great. And I know Mike Elgin is writing for you. In fact, he has the article, Why Apple Will Dominate CES. And that has been true every year the last since the iPhone came out, since 2007.
Yeah.
Last year, everybody was talking about iPad 2, the year before iPad, the year before the iPhone. I think this is the first year that it doesn't dominate. Now, it's early days. The show's been going on for 2.5 hours, so it might be too early to tell. But I see a lot of Microsoft, lot of Windows Phone, lot of Android.
True enough, exactly. I know. Microsoft has really come back this year. It's ironic.
This is their year.
Yeah.
Their last year, but their year.
Yeah.
Going out with a bang.
Yeah. Very interesting.
I think that while Apple's not here and while you're not seeing a lot of the new Apple products, the one thing almost every person in almost every article that I've seen, every time they talk about anything being added to the TV, they say But we're not sure how this will compare to the iTV. Apple isn't even here. They haven't even announced it.
There is no iTV, but it does.
But that every
it's on their mind.
TV is going up against this mythical beast that you know, this unicorn that you know. But we've seen this unicorn so many times now. You know, we've seen it. You know, oh, they're never going to build a phone. Oh, they're never going to do an iPad. Oh, they're never, you know, and so you hear this, and then it just starts to keep on picking up speed, and it seems like a lot of when we're talking.
You're saying it feels like the drumbeat for the iPad and the iPhone.
Well, I'm just saying
pre-release.
It feels like it's a CES pre-release where you have manufacturers that are very concerned about how whatever Apple's going to do is going to affect their business. And they're trying to figure out ways to add interactivity, ways to add Google TV, ways to add their own tools, their connected pieces.
Well, I mean, they should be doing that anyway, whether or not there's ever an iTV coming down the pipe, and there's probably not going to be one this year. It's just, I think it makes for a good article half the time.
Yeah, I just find it interesting how often you see it getting brought up.
Irfan, have you seen that LG 55-inch OLED 4-millimeter thick display?
I have not.
You
is
haven't?
On the show floor? No,
it is
I've
on the show floor. It's
in
gorgeous.
A dark cave writing.
We
got to
get you writers. I know Sarah saw it because it was at that event that I wasn't allowed into last night.
Not that he's bitter.
Digital experience.
I wasn't going to say the name, but yeah. So and I saw it as we walked in the show floor. We took a look at it actually on our live feed. The rumor is, and I'd love for the Cult of Mac guys, because I know you hear all the rumors, that since LG already makes Apple's panels, maybe this, which is not LG television but LG's panel division, maybe this is intended for an Apple TV.
Sounds plausible.
Does it?
For sure,
does it sound sensible? The only issue, of course, would be cost. Could Apple get away with charging $5,000 to $8,000 for an Apple TV?
Oh, gosh.
No, yeah, easily.
So. You think so? I do not.
Well,
that's
initially, but
especially since LCDs are now down below $1,000 at that size.
Yeah, I mean.
By the way, LG was not at Digital Experience last night.
I thought that the Samsung's was. Samsung's was.
It wasn't the OLED.
They didn't have
LED,
the OLED,
though.
Oh, well, I didn't miss anything.
No.
Well, these guys have huge overcapacity of panels, right? So they're dirt cheap, and they're dying to find a way to get rid of
them,
to shift them.
That's right.
The trouble is, I think, with when you think about Apple, is that they come out with a new iPhone every year. They have a new iPad every year. You know, they're in the hardware business, and they're in the hardware upgrade business. Every year they have something better. And how are they going to do that in the TV business? I think that's going to be difficult for them to figure out how exactly do they get people to upgrade the hardware if they're going to use their traditional hardware business model.
It is true that the Apple community is willing to pay higher prices for their gear.
We are. But look, that's true, but $10,000, $8,000, $5,000 for a TV.
I would be very surprised if we saw anything more than $2,000 or $3,000.
Totally agree.
That, it has to be a consumer product.
Yeah.
They won't necessarily charge a premium, because look at the iPad. The iPad is actually probably, was a really good deal when it came out. It was really shocking.
Isn't that interesting? But they were, and even though Steve Jobs said we are not competing against netbooks, they really were competing against the low-end, low-priced computer hardware.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's true in TV right now. I mean, it's been such a bad year for HDTV manufacturers. They've been dumping their panels, as I said, for less than $1,000 for a 55-inch display.
And I think people, if Apple decided to go down that path, I think that what they are going to bring is more applications. They're not going to just bring video.
Yep.
I think what you have people that are tired of the viruses of their little PCs, and they're tired of, you know, or they don't want to buy, you know, they realize all I'm using it for is web surfing and email, and I just want to incorporate that with my TV and not think about it anymore. So I think the sell point, if Apple decided to go down that path, is that this isn't a TV. This is how you communicate. This is how you do all that other stuff along with your TV, in that experience.
I totally agree. One of the things that Steve Jobs had said before was the problem was getting people to buy this hardware, right? Because they already had TiVos, they were getting stuff from Dish, right? They didn't need to buy any more hardware. So if it comes built into the TV, it's like then all of a sudden people are like, oh, Apple has a TV. Oh, and it comes with all this extra functionality that I would have had to buy an Apple TV or some other device to get. So for me, it's like a natural choice. And if they make it similar or close to like a nice high-end TV, for me, it'd be a no-brainer.
Yeah. I mean, I think And there's ways that they could make components that are interchangeable. I know it's not exactly Apple. It's something that could pop in, pop out, so they could change the
brand. That's why I wonder why even bother with a panel. You've got an Apple TV that can do all those things. Now, I have to say, Apple is felt here in a non-explicit way, because every TV manufacturer is showing TVs with built-in apps.
Which are still really, really hard to use.
These smart TVs.
Yeah.
I don't know. I was looking at the LG. Now, I only went by cursorily. But we showed everybody, if you watched our live stream at the beginning of the day, The LG TV with Google TV. Was it LG? Yeah, with Google TV built in. It was an ice cream sandwich. They had a remote that I thought was decent, but then they also were showing you a phone and tablet interface. Android, not iPhone.
Well, that makes sense.
I thought that it was actually pretty clear, pretty easy to use.
Right.
Certainly no worse than an Apple TV. Yeah. Big icons.
Alex, why do you think that Sony apps are so hard to use in a TV interface now?
Because going through it with the remote control, uh-huh. You know, do that little whatever that yeah. they want you to do. Now it does make sense exactly with the Google TV integration with an Android phone or whatever. If you have an Android phone, that totally makes sense. But I think that integrating our lifestyle with our little portable, whatever that is, our iPad, our Android, that makes it easier. That makes it like, because I don't lose this very often. My family loses the controller once a day. Like once a day, we can't figure out how to get to the Apple TV or back away
from
the Apple TV.
That's why you need gesture-based.
Well, and the thing is that I think those are good, but I think that the big thing here, and I think that TV manufacturers want to stay the dumb panel, but the issue is that I think that when I look at the way my kids and the way my parents use their computers, they don't need anything more than a fully operational iOS on their TV.
Yeah.
Right.
And I still think that there is a big argument. The Apple TV is fine, but I think that there is a big argument for a camera that's going to do Kinect kind of solutions as well as mm-hmm. the FaceTime. And I do think that FaceTime blows up for families. We do so much FaceTime now with my kids' grandparents. You know, like where they can, now that everybody's got an iPhone or an iPad or something, you know, the ability to let them, say, hey, the kids are doing this and taking little videos and letting them talk to them and everything else now that the kids are becoming more interactive, that's a very compelling thing, and it's more compelling when it's in the living room. You know, and I think I do think it's the total computing experience. It's getting rid of the computer, and I think this is what Apple's doing. They're getting rid of the computer for the average person across the board. I mean, even with their own line, they're slowly winding it down. But I think that they're slowly just cutting off. Instead of trying to beat Windows, they're just creating a whole other game.
They're just adding everything.
Right. It's a completely new paradigm.
And they're very good at expanding their experiences, right? So they started with the iPod, and that brought a lot of people to the Mac. And then and they had the iPhone, and then all of a sudden, oh, hey, there's an iPad. It's just like the iPhone. I can already use this if I buy one. And I think that's going to be a big selling point for the TV. You get a TV, and it's like all of a sudden, you already know how to use it because it interacts so well with the devices you already own.
That's the Steve Jobs phrase, you already know how to use it. And that was key, wasn't it? In fact, to the acceptance of the iPad, it was just a big iPhone.
And I think that's why it has sold so much better than competing Android devices.
We have some videos that you took on the show floor. I know you, Alex, are going to be doing this.
We actually shot these ones
with a real camera?
With a real camera. So Lynn
Son
shot
of
these.
A gun, how do you do that?
I know, it was crazy. So Lynn actually shot them, and I ran around, and I came ready, but then I ended up.
I've been using my iPhone and doing Audio Boo, which is audio only, uh-huh. and Social Cam for video, and just blogging right. with audio and video. It's been kind of got me back to my roots when I was an unaligned, unaffiliated journalist trying to get a story.
It's remarkably it's kind of refreshing fun. That it's not because I, you know, you see, even with this, you've seen me.
It's so simple.
I start rigging things up, though. And,
yeah, you can't make anything simple. Well, Alex has some goods. He's got some video. We've got a great panel, including from Cult of Mac. We've got Irfan Elijah and Leander Kani. Of course, Sarah Lane is here. We'll talk also about that is one way that Apple is absolutely here with the iLounge. We'll talk about some what we might be expecting in the iLounge. And a lot more. Just a bit before we do, let me talk a little bit about our friends at Citrix who make GoToMyPC the easiest way to access your system from anywhere, including, yes, your iPhone and your iPad. Picture this. You're on your way home after work. You check your iPhone, and you see an urgent request that needs immediate attention. So what do? Go back, turn around, go back to work, and log onto your computer. What if you had to go to my PC on the iPhone? You could just pull over. And notice I say that because I know you guys aren't going to pull over. You're going to be going like this while you're driving. Don't do that. Pull over, log in to go to my PC on your iPhone. There's your computer, Windows or Mac. You can edit PowerPoints or Keynotes, update spreadsheets, work on any file right from your iPhone. Of course, they've got an iPad app that's free as well. And your desktop works as well, too. Mac or PC, it's the fastest, easiest way to do remote access. Absolutely secure, easy to set up. You don't need help from the IT department. In fact, if you could set it up right now while I'm talking, before I'm done, you'd have it set up. Just go to the website, gotomypc.com. Click the Try It Free button. Are you following along? And use my offer code MacBreak. Go to mypc.com. Try It Free button. Offer code is MacBreak. You can try it free for 30 days. Use all the stuff. See, you know, try that thing where you're driving home and you pull over and you use the iPhone. All of that stuff. Absolutely free. Go to mypc.com. The folks at Citrix do the best remote access software out there. The fastest, the easiest to use. And I did mention security, 128-bit SSL, so you're always encrypted, always secure. You can use it on an open Wi-Fi access hotspot like we're using right here and feel secure. Go to mypc.com. Use the offer code MacBreak. So Alex Lindsay was out in the field with, was it Lynn who was out there? Eileen?
Yeah.
Who?
Lynn
and let's, so which one do we want to do, or do we do them both? GoPro is here, I know. I love these little GoPro cameras. Let's take a look at the video that you guys shot at the GoPro booth.
GoPro, and GoPro, of course, is these guys are the ones that really created this. So this whole little miniature camera, high quality video thing. This is really was started, I think, in a lot of ways by GoPro, or the craze has been started there. And really, what they make is this great durable camera. Now, this is just the guts of it. You can get all kinds of plastic encasements that you can take underwater. You can connect them together. In fact, you can sync up to 50 of these over Wi-Fi. See this little back plate here? So this little back plate here, it's going to be probably like $99 coming out in a couple months. This will control this GoPro and broadcast it via Wi-Fi, but it'll also control up to 50 other GoPros. Now, you can also sync them hardwired to, like, truly sync them, but you can get them all firing continuous or start all the videos. If you're about to do your crazy, you know, whatever jump or whatever you're planning to do, you can get them all started all at the same time with a little wrist controller. So it's pretty nifty. 1080p 30, 960 48 frames a second, and 720p at 60 frames a second. So it's kind of a slick little guy. And again, it doesn't look like a very durable case, but once you start putting the plastic in, you can see some of them over here. So you can see there's a lot of little encasements here that you can put together. It's also got an HDMI out, which you'll see in a bunch of them. HDMI out means that you can get, if you wanted to hook these to some kind of mixing system or live stream system, you could do it with that.
You know what I like about it? They made no attempt to design anything at all attractive. They basically said, what's the smallest space we could put all that electronics in? Okay, now wrap a box around it.
And one of the things that
Which is fine. I mean, it does what it does.
We have a bunch of GoPros, and one of the things that we like to use them for is just like little witness cameras so we know where people are and what things are doing. And it's great because you have this little live output. We don't even record with them.
They're live, like live webcams?
Yeah, we just use them as live webcams.
You call them witness cameras?
Oh, yeah.
That's a little weird.
Right.
Witness camera just means
we know where you were on the night.
It's a little weird.
The witness camera is just that we put them where, like at an event, we put them where we know the speakers are going to be or where they're going to, so we can see them walking
check.
Up, and so we just
a
little monitor cool. where we can see them.
We have been using, in fact, we're using it right now. I don't know where it is.
The drop cam?
The drop cam. There it is.
That's up there.
And they're here. In fact, we're going to get a new drop cam. They've been using, they've been licensing Axis's cameras, which are Wi-Fi enabled cameras. Axis makes good cameras. Is that the drop cam shot? No. You can see it. Oh, there it is. Right there on the right of the shot. Wow, you guys are
They've
good.
They've got a new DropCam HD. We talked to them last night.
Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah.
They're going to outfit the new brick house with DropCam HDs on every corner.
Oh, you'll be happy about that.
No, I don't mind the DropCams. It's just that the audio is so good. Sarah finally said,
they can hear what I'm saying.
Well,
you're right.
I don't care most of the
time. That's your desk. That's your desk. That's your office. That's your private time.
Yeah.
And to have a camera over your shoulder.
One day I'm going to say my
when you say,
OMG,
you're so cute when you do that little thing with your nose.
I would never say that. Ever.
Hey, MG wrote it. MG Siegler, Paris Lemon's blog.
He hates Android.
Wrote a very interesting blog post, which I could not disagree with, actually. At first, I thought, here we go again. Yeah. Apple fanboy, Android just because it's not an iPhone. Uh-huh. And you know what? He made a really very cogent, good case, I thought.
Yeah, you have to get through the article.
You do have to read.
Tom said this morning, why does MG hate Android? I said, he made extremely clear points.
Yeah.
You just have to read the whole article.
His complaint really was that he was prepared to love Android, that mm-hmm. Google had an opportunity to truly do an open phone that wasn't beholden to the carriers. And instead, because the Google Nexus One they didn't sell, carriers basically killed it by not adopting it.
And they had a relationship with Verizon.
Eventually, Google said, oh, screw it. We're going to have to get in bed with Verizon. They did that horrible deal, which at the time we all agreed was a terrible betrayal to net neutrality, did that kind of joint paper with Verizon that eventually did in fact change net neutrality rules for the worst, because they wanted to be in bed with them. It was a business decision. It was not a political decision or a decision about open. And I completely agree with MG that that really was a betrayal on Google's part. And even if you love Android phones, to think of them as the good guys in favor of open systems is probably not any longer true. Now, he might be going a little far when he says Apple's fighting for us. I mean, he does point out that Apple can stick it, unlike any other company, can stick it to the carriers and has. I don't know if they're really fighting for us exactly.
I feel like Apple's just like, we're not going to answer to a carrier. It's
right.
Not so much that they're the voice
not
of the
people.
Not to protect
us, yeah.
No.
Yeah.
It's just good business.
It's just good business.
Well, and the thing that Apple is doing is slowly getting rid of the carrier. I mean, when you look at your iMessage,
they
when
really
you look
are
at your,
trying,
you know, they're
right
just, but they're just, it's it, instead of, there's no frontal assault. They just keep on sliding.
And that's
little
their
bits,
way. That's the Apple way.
Little bits
it's
away.
It's to sneak in under the radar. They did it with the music industry. Steve Jobs said, oh, you know, sell those 99-cent a la carte singles. And the music industry said, oh, it's just a little Apple. It couldn't hurt us. Couldn't possibly be a problem. Oh, what's that? Who's going to buy records on iTunes? I think they're doing the same exact thing.
Well, and you look at, like, the I now, when I'm sending images,
iMessage,
I resist sending images when I'm overseas to anyone I don't iMessage.
Yeah, because it completely disintermediates the carrier. No longer you pay those expensive SMS fees. You're using your Wi-Fi or 3G, right?
When I'm on overseas, I will not.
Does it use 3G?
Yeah, it uses 3G, and so it's just your data. Or if
so
I'm,
it's
or
pure
if I'm,
data.
So if I'm on, if I'm overseas, which I am a lot, I will not send you a text message or an image or anything else if I don't see the iMessage.
Oh,
like
yeah.
I just, like, you're out of communication.
Otherwise,
me.
It's going to cost you a lot of money.
Well,
right.
I only have 200 of them a month or whatever overseas, right. And so I'm like,
I was shocked when Apple announced iMessage. I was shocked that the carriers would let them do that
because they can't.
They
had a choice. Yeah. And what was the next thing AT&T did? Oh, hey. We realize that you guys don't really want smaller text message packages. Those are inconvenient for you.
Right.
So we're going to go ahead and just get rid of those. Just pay us the $20 a month for
that's
the
all.
Unlimited package.
Yeah.
Then you'll be fine.
Then you won't mind.
Plus data capping, too. I mean, you know, the data caps now are really draconian. I mean, it's almost impossible to do anything on the lower packages. You know, the 2 gigabytes a month, we run out of that in like a week.
Well, and I'm still waiting to see when Apple will finally just pull the trigger and let you call another iPhone over Wi-Fi, over data.
Yeah.
Just call, just like, you know,
but
like
that's
FaceTime.
A good point.
Instead of
with
FaceTime, and
with
just FaceTime, make a call.
They have prohibited you from using 3G. That was a concession to the carriers, wasn't it? So that they do pay attention to what the carriers want. If they really didn't like the carriers, we'd be all making 3G and Wi-Fi calls on FaceTime, and then we'd really be screwing the carriers.
I mean,
when are they going to turn that on? There's no technical reason.
Right. Well, the carriers are terrified.
That
they're
there'd
just,
be a
just
lot of dropped
pipes.
Calls, a yeah. lot of dropped FaceTime sessions.
Because
we
of
were
the
3G? On
3G.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's already.
But what I don't understand is why. I mean, I do understand it, but
I've
waiting
done 3G
for is
Skype driving down the road with video and everything. I clipped the camera.
Sounds
so
safe.
I'm driving.
Yeah.
Talk about unsafe. So I'm driving. It was to Rick Salmon, who's a great photographer, and he wanted to talk, and I was on the road. I said, well, let's do this. And I'm looking at Rick while I'm driving, and he's looking at me. And then we did drop the call. And Rick called me back immediately. Said, "Did you have an accident?" I said, "No, we just dropped the call."
But the thing is that if you went to voice,
by the way, super cool. Maybe that's why Apple doesn't do it, because people would be FaceTiming while they're driving. It was really, really cool to drive down the road, and he's seeing the road go by me as we talk on the phone. I thought that was neat.
We were in at the little monkey park in Yudanaka, which is about 3 hours of trains out of Tokyo in the middle of the mountains, about as far away from Tokyo
as
where the snow monkeys are. I'm FaceTiming with my son in Freeport, Pennsylvania, and my daughter was with me, and so we had a little MiFi, like a Japanese version of the MiFi. And so we're sitting there like talking to him, FaceTiming. I was showing my kids in Petaluma the monkeys live, and we're sitting there talking about it, and I was, you know, and that was, you know, and the great thing is that was free. I mean, it was the MiFi,
right,
or whatever. And the issue is that I think Apple obviously could, you know, use 3G for voice. And the thing is if they, I think, you know, it's just a matter of time before Apple just flips that switch. And then, because then suddenly all your iPod touches and all your, you know, everything just become phones. You know,
right,
as long as you're near a Wi-Fi, which is becoming almost ubiquitous. You know?
Let me ask you guys, maybe you can help one of our chatters. KS Kryptonian said his problem with iMessage is my wife and I share an Apple ID on two different phones. She's getting my messages, I'm getting her messages. It's Apple ID specific. Now, you know why people want to share Apple IDs. They don't want to buy songs and apps that say it twice.
Yeah,
I think you can send it to a number. I mean, I think that when I'm iMessaging, it's,
Can you disable
the Apple
ID in iMessage?
I guess I never share. That's fine.
I don't either, because it creates a lot of headache. And what a lot of people don't realize is that you don't need to have the same Apple ID to share stuff. You can authorize apps, music, on up to five computers still, right?
So you still need to log in. You need to log into that computer.
Well, the most important thing to remember is you don't have to log into a single Apple ID on the phone. Your iTunes store and your App Store can be logged into one ID, and iMessage and iCloud can be a different ID.
That's true, because every once in a while I'll get an iMessage from, like, a Yahoo Mail account.
Right.
It's like, what? What is this?
And
then I realize, they just associated that for whatever reasons.
Right.
So it shouldn't be...
I wonder where the settings
You shouldn't
would
be constrained to just a symbol.
I will say that is one
Apple
of the big
ID.
Weaknesses, in my opinion. A lot of the Apple, the way the Apple system works is that it really is a one-user environment.
Yeah.
You know, because it got worse when they went to the iCloud from the... Because when you had... now I can't remember what it was called. But,
could put an email address in here.
Yeah, you can.
When you go into your settings and then you go down to messages... You have an option to receive at. I have two addresses set up to receive email plus my phone number. So, you can just...
Brent, you could show that, I think, on here. This is the part of the show where I give away personal information about myself.
I'm glad you did.
Is that your social security number on there?
That's
I always... Lee always grabs my iPhone. I'm like, I don't know if I was ready for that.
You can zoom in because I'm covering the last four digits of my phone number. I think that's...
There you go.
Yeah. So you could set all of that. And you don't have to use an Apple ID.
Right.
I mean, I have it in there, but I could take it out. Mm-hmm. Cool.
Can you do iMessage without an Apple ID? Don't you?
Well,
don't you
I think one? So. Let me... I don't know.
Well, I think you can use either a phone number or an email address. But it can be confusing because...
Okay, I've signed out on my account, and now I can only use a phone number.
Right.
All of the features went away, so I think you do have to have... an Apple ID logged in to be using other emails. So create a new Apple ID and use that. Let your wife use one, you use the other, and share it. But you could still sign into your iTunes store with the shared ID, I think. So KS Kryptonian, and now he says, but what about my iPad? Oh, screw you.
You can use your email address on your iPad. That's
right.
What I do.
Right. Yeah, and that was a problem with me for FaceTime is... I couldn't use the same email address on multiple FaceTime devices. It would say, Leo at Leoville's already used on your I mean, it was like confusing to me. Like I had to have a different address for every device.
Well, it's because there are different phone numbers associated
with Right, that's
with
how
them.
It would call, is by email address.
So
it wouldn't know what to ring.
Right.
Okay. We have another video. Where else did you go?
Contour?
What's that?
All I did was look at cameras. I know this is an option.
You know, PMA, this is to me. Okay, let me say this up front. This is probably going to be a smaller CES than last year. About 100 fewer exhibitors. I suspect there'll be fewer visitors here this year. But they did something very smart. They joined up with the Photo Marketers Association show, which is the big camera show in the U.S., and that added 500 camera manufacturers.
It made a lot
Canon
of sense for PMA
because
you have all these people that are interested in electronics.
Anyway.
There's that crossover.
It's a big crossover.
PMA, to be honest with you, was kind of slow. I mean, I was like looking. I don't know if I really want to go to PMA.
And they skipped it last year, didn't they?
I think last year, it was slowing down.
They were having problems.
It makes
so this
a lot
was a way of
here.
Saving PMA.
Absolutely, and I think it makes sense. Now I shot this last night, but it's another video camera. I was really focused on little miniature cameras.
So let's take a look. This is the Contour.
Contour. Now, Contour makes another one of those kind of action adventure cameras. So, what you have here is you've got three different versions here. This is your basic Contour. Now, what this is really set up for is you've got kind of a modular setup. You've got your quarter 20 connection that all your cameras have, but there's a lot of things that you can slide onto it. So, you've got all kinds of little pieces that you can kind of slide on to attach them to your. You can see all these little pieces here, but you can attach them to your. To your helmet, you can attach them to your arms, you can attach them to all kinds of pieces. So they have it here. Now, one of the things is you don't have to worry about the button. You slide it forward and it starts to record. You can rotate this. So if you get it onto your helmet and you notice that it's a little cockeyed, you can kind of turn it and actually get it just right. So it's kind of slick. Now, this is the lowest end one. This is $199. It's the most basic version of the process. You also have one here. Now, this one is a GPS. So if you had this, if you were wearing it and you had kind of a the hangover kind of experience, you know, we are in Vegas, this would have solved the hangover. The hangover would have ended up being like 2 hours because you would have known, I mean, two hours of the day and only a 10-minute movie because they would have known where they went because this has GPS all applied into the video. And you can turn it on and off, and that's all the basic stuff here. Now, this one starts to turn it up. Now, this is $299. This is $499. Now, what you get for $499 is you have your USB, but you also have an HDMI live output. You can also attach a microphone. So this is a little 1/8-inch jack that you can put into there. And, of course, you can rotate this up to 270 degrees to organize it. Now, the other thing that you can do is actually have this project out via Wi-Fi to your mobile device. So you can actually have a couple these two here will put it out to Wi-Fi. You can actually see it on your iPad, your iPhone, and your Android through one of their applications. And so there's a lot of ways for you to kind of look at what you're actually shooting, make your adjustments, and be ready to roll, hit record, and you're off to the races. So anyway, so that's Contour, a slightly different version, 170 degrees, 135 degrees of field of view. So slightly different as far as that.
Are you wearing beads?
They gave us beads. I like the
I
beads.
Never got any beads.
You know, I could see why they didn't let me into Pepcom. That thing was wall-to-wall people. You couldn't hardly move. There was nobody there!
There were plenty of people there. It was just a very large space.
Were you there late at night?
I shot everything right at the end.
Oh,
so
okay.
I just wandered around, looked at everything.
So two of these cameras now are awesome, but very much aimed at like adventure sports.
Well, I think that's the big market for these little cameras. A lot of the market is.
You don't really want to take a video of you doing shopping.
No, I certainly don't want to wear a helmet either.
Well, and there's also a certain level of. I mean, there's lots of little cameras. Where the same lenses go are like camera phones. So if you're not doing adventure sports, what a lot of these are specializing in is that I'm going to do something rugged, and that's what specializes them and what sets them apart from just having a camera phone.
Right.
You know, it's the same quality of chip, really. It might even be the same chip. But what they're really doing is how do I make it easier to be on the road?
Exactly.
It's fun. I want to see some still cameras, though. Can you do that next week?
Yes.
Next time.
Well, the D4
next
came
week,
out.
There won't be anybody here.
The D4.
New Nikon D4.
I drew all I want to say thing is last night.
Uncompressed HDMI out with no interface.
I thought that's what you'd like about it.
That's all I have to say.
So that was another thing I missed last night.
Not that you're bitter.
Not that I'm bitter.
These guys are from Santa Rosa.
I want to show this. This is another kind of camera. We'll talk about that in just a moment.
Okay.
But we want to take a little bit of a break. Is this another? Is this? Do you, could another, I use this shopping, another. Or would I have to get put a helmet on to wear that?
No, you can use this in all kinds of fun little ways.
Another witness camera coming up in just a little bit. Actually, Alex has some other things, including I want to take this home with me.
Oh yes,
I want this at my house. I thought that you couldn't get these anymore. We'll talk about that in just a second. But first, let's talk about backup. You know how important it is to back up. I hope you know how important it is to back up. You're backing up, right? What? Okay. Look, I know why people don't back up. They think they're backing up. I asked my dad, you back up? He said, oh, yeah, I back up. I said, well, tell me about your backup. Whenever I think of it, I take a USB key and I copy some files to it. That is not what I would call a strategy. Because, first of all, you don't think about it, right? You might back up once every 6 months. If just think about what's on your hard drive right now and how you would feel if the next time you turn on your computer, it wasn't there. I'm not talking about your applications. I'm not talking about Windows. You can reinstall those. I'm not talking about the OS X. I'm talking about your stuff, your pictures, pictures of your baby or your wedding, travel plans, financial records, emails, all that stuff that, you know, your hard drive's holding it. It's precious. And, you know, you probably don't have an up-to-date backup. That's why Carbonite. So here's the deal with Carbonite. It is unlimited backup for your internal drive, so perfect for a laptop. It does it whenever you're online. It's using 128-bit SSL, so once again, you don't have to worry if you're like somewhere like here on an open access point. People aren't seeing your data. It's all encrypted. You could further encrypt it if you want total privacy, by the way. Doesn't slow your system down. Mac or PC, yes, it works great with Lion. Less than $5 a year, a month, rather, for all the data on your internal drive. That's a good deal. $59 a year. Try it free for 2 weeks. Now, they do have other plans. The $59 a year plan is for everything on your internal drive. You want to back up all these big external drives we have. They have a plan for that. If you have multiple computers, they have a plan for that. But in every case, you can go to Carbonite.com and try it free for 2 weeks so you get a sense of how it works on your system. And then if you decide to buy Use the offer code MacBreak, and you'll get 2 months free, 14 months for the price of 12. So Carbonite.com, use the offer code MacBreak to try it free, and use MacBreak again if you decide to buy to get 14 months for the price of 12. Carbonite, it's backup done right. And if you're not doing it, maybe you better start right now. Carbonite.
We don't want to panic you.
Well,
you're jumping out of a plane without a parachute.
Yeah, no kidding. How can it be unlimited, says Hufinden. That's not possible. Well, that's why it's not like every drive you own. It's your internal drive. You can't hook up one of these big suckers. What is this big sucker?
So this is this is an existing drive. This is the big news with this. This is the LaCie. Yeah. So this
is the Thunderbolt. Oh, my God. We're seeing an actual Thunderbolt drive.
It's actually one of the things that we're seeing a lot of now is people starting to show them. Now, they're still coming out. So this is a small Thunderbolt. And Seagate makes these, and Seagate makes...
So it's a dock.
And I have these. This is actually the drives that I've been starting to use.
This is a drive that doesn't have a connector, normal connector. It has a docking connector. And then you buy this additional add-on.
Right.
And it docks into that with a docking connector, and then this one's Thunderbolt. But you could presumably get USB or FireWire.
So what I have the one that I have in my house you can have one a dock that
you
can
just like buy one dock, and then you have a bunch of little.
You could have one drive modules and a bunch of different ways, depending on. You can have docks that
you can have multiple docks or multiple drives.
And multiple connections. And instead of like plugging and unplugging and figuring out how you want to connect it. Now, the advantage, of course, is that this one has, of course, the Thunderbolt.
Right.
So this is going to...
I love the Thunderbolt.
Thunderbolt.
Icon,
and then this
by the
is...
way. It's a Thunderbolt.
That's so how can, it should be. You can it's use that intuitive. Drive for an iPad or a
Well, what
computer?
Was the FireWire icon? Was it a wire on fire? No.
I'm a little unclear on the concept. Why would you want to have different connection options?
No, I'll tell you why, actually. Is because the issue that we have is that we end up on a laptop. And this
Alex
is,
works in a world that is unlike any other human.
You want to transfer between two drives, and if they're both FireWire drives or both USB drives, it'll really be slow to connect them to your laptop or something else. And so being able you
one
can
Thunderbolt,
swap,
one FireWire.
Or just all Thunderbolt now. I mean, so this, by the way, is a dock. So this is...
Oh, that's a dock, too. So they're solving this issue by making... Because nobody's ever going to buy this. So they're solving... But wait a minute. They can't charge enough for that. How much do they charge for the dock?
I think this is $189.
Oh, jeez. So, but and that's again, licensing fees, right? That's probably what all like yeah. $90 of that is probably licensing fees.
I don't know. I will say the other thing you're going to get is a lot more speed. So this is going to be three times faster than a FireWire 800.
But the drive isn't.
The drive is capable of doing much faster than what
it
you're,
is.
Yeah, the drive is typically even a 7200 RPM drive
is faster than
is
FireWire?
Faster than the FireWire is able to support. And so what you're actually going to be able to get is a much faster connection than what you'd have with a FireWire. The only way you get the same speed is eSATA. So if you had an eSATA connection, right. You'd really get full and
that's full 3 gigabit transfer.
Right.
And this is more than 3 gigabits though. What is the
10
gigabits? Yeah.
Yeah, and that so it's
eSATA
gonna,
is only 3. So.
So this is going to be a very fast connection, and you can daisy chain them. So this is part of a flow. So you can have, I really think that the big thing is that you're able to have a bunch of drives all connected to one connection, and there's so much headroom in that connection that I can have this drive, I can have another drive, I can have a capture device, I can have all these other things that are stacked up, and I have one little cable. It's an expensive cable, but one little cable that that plugs into my computer and attaches to all of this stuff. And when I'm leaving with my laptop.
That's a Thunderbolt.
I'm off to the races.
Now, so this is pass-through? Is that
yep,
the
you
idea?
Can pass it through.
So
one in, one out.
One in, one out.
So you would... You
and what is the limit on Thunderbolt devices?
Six.
Six total.
Six total.
Does your monitor count as one?
Yes.
So if you use... Most people use Thunderbolt, at least right now, just for their monitor. But if you have that connected, you could have five more devices.
Right. And you could basically, at home, you can daisy-chain those devices from your monitor. So you could run your Thunderbolt into your monitor... Into your Thunderbolt monitor, and then put your drives. And
every Thunderbolt device has one in one. It's kind of like FireWire.
Yeah, it just lets it pass through. Right. And the big thing is that when you passed it through before, whether like USB or FireWire, the whole chain has a maximum speed that it can run at. The headroom on the Thunderbolt is so much higher that you're able to attach all these things and still get their full speed.
Ah.
You know, so that, you know, and you have one little cable.
I get it. So there, 10 gigabits is more than any drive. But if you have five drives, now you're not maxing out.
Like, for instance, if you decided you really needed a lot of speed, you can take two external drives. They were actually showing this at the LaCie booth. to two external drives and make a RAID 0 out of them, and you're getting like 500 megabytes a second.
So this is the first trade show we've really seen lower-end devices. I mean, at NAB show last year, we saw Blackmagic had a number of Thunderbolt
These
video
are more consumer.
Devices. These are more consumer-friendly.
Yeah, so you're seeing...
Although not cheap, $200 for the dock alone.
It's not going to be the cheapest solution at the beginning, especially, because people are just getting started at it. And right. What I'm excited is where I was getting worried that we weren't going to see anything. I mean, it was starting to look like... It was starting to get dark.
Well, we had that conversation last week or the week before. I thought Thunderbolt might be DOA.
But we're seeing a lot of commitment from Seagate, from LaCie, from I think G-Raid is showing some stuff. So there's a lot of people that are showing drives. And I don't think this is going to be for everyone. If you're an average consumer, a USB drive is probably fine, a FireWire drive. But I think FireWire is probably... I think the laptops and the computers that have FireWire in them, this is the last year.
Right.
You know, I think that... And I feel bad about that. It makes me sad, too. But I think
you probably still have some SCSI drives lying around, don't you?
I'm using 3.5-inch discs at home for my backup plan.
Never give up.
So anyway, so I think that it's... I'm excited to see it kind of move forward in that process.
This is a camera. This is like the Contour and the GoPro. I mean, what's happening is that these little tiny camera chipsets are out. And right. So people are thinking of all different new form factors. What is this?
So this is an Ego, and this is from...
Okay, just pulled it out of the
shot.
You're
going to hold it? Oh, I was going to turn it so you could see
Well, you can turn it, but just keep it right there, okay?
All right, so this is an Ego.
Use and your hands, that's all right.
So this will capture 12 megapixel images. It also does up to 1080p at 30 and 60p at 720p. It'll do Wi-Fi, so you can have your smartphone or tablet or computer.
It has Wi-Fi built-in?
Built-in.
Oh, that's
it's got a micro SD. It comes with a 4 gigabit, but you can have up a gigabyte, but you can have up to 32.
It's so it records and streams.
And streams. All of these record as well. And then and then it also has an HDMI and a USB to power it. But an HDMI...
The power is... So there's no battery in this thing. It's
well, no, you can have up to about an hour and a half, 2 hours okay. internal battery.
Wow.
And no, that's just to charge it. The USB right. is just to charge... I mean, and then it's got an HDMI out, so you can get HD streaming out of this. This could be... You know, this is also... possibly another thing that you could use with a little bit of a conversion as a webcam, but you could definitely, like one of the things we want to play with is a miniature, like on the road switching kit. We can actually plug this camera or other cameras into them and then connect them to a little switcher, and you'd have this thing you could fit in your backpack that you could do a 3 or 4 camera shoot with. It's pretty nifty. This is one of the least expensive ones, too. This is $149 MSRP.
It looks waterproof. Is it waterproof?
I don't think it's waterproof. I think it's water... Yeah. I think it's water resistant. When you look at the way that
it's rubberized, and it's got these are sealed. But yeah, I think you probably wouldn't want to.
If you put it under, it's that distinction between resistant and proof. Right. It
could
get wet.
Is that a flash? What is that on there?
I think that's the interface.
There's a light.
Yeah, no, I believe that that's the interface. So I think that if you push that on, I don't know if it's back.
Oh, it's like is it a little?
That's how you type
it's a little
Wi-Fi
interface,
password.
So you can kind of push stuff in, and
it's a little LCD display.
Yeah, so that
it's
you
so
can
teensy.
Like just so you can get just the information that you need.
Wow.
So anyway, it's a pretty nifty little, you know, something you can throw in your pack. You can attach. It's got a quarter 20 on the bottom, so it's got your standard mount. So you can have a like for instance, you could if you had one of those little Gorilla Pods. And you want to attach
right.
this.
Right, I love it because this has the mount. Yeah.
This also does, of course, it'll do interval shooting, so 12 megapixels of, you know, time lapse.
So
you can take one of these and just attach it and let it run.
There it is. It is on. Between the Contour, the GoPro, and this, they seem fairly comparable.
It just depends on what you want to do. You know, the GoPro is going to be... The GoPro is a little bit more expensive. It's a little bit more durable. It's a little bit more scalable, but it costs more, and it's also just slightly larger. If you like, for
this
some
is
people,
really cute.
It is really cute. It's really cute. This is the least expensive one. It still has your live outputs, your Wi-Fi. Yeah, and 1080p and 60 frames a second at 720p. This one's going to be the least expensive, the smallest one. You could throw a bunch of them in your pack. It's going to be, and weight becomes important if you're trying to attach them for like time lapse or you're attaching them to something. So the GoPro is on one end. I think if you're really looking for scale and stuff like that, it's on one end. Now, these guys also make goggles. You know, they make the goggles that have the camera attached to it so you can be skiing or motocrossing with and capturing stuff. That's what they really got known for. This is new for them. Liquid Image has mostly been doing like scuba masks, goggles.
Oh, they were here last year with scuba masks with cameras
in
them.
Yeah, so that's what they do.
That's who these guys this are. Is, I remember them now. So that was the remember, guys? We had the Android head. That they had the mask on,
and it turns out they're in Santa Rosa, so
they're local.
They're gonna have to come down and check our little
Neato.
Studio out. But
how long before we're doing shows with cameras that small?
I'm going to be doing one as soon as I get the cameras.
I mean, these probably are, you know, will soon get as good as the cameras we're using.
Well, I think that the big thing is that we look at, you know, we stream in a lot of different levels, you know, sometimes with big broadcast cameras. But one of the things that I want is to be able to have something in a backpack or a fanny pack that's my mixer with a bunch of little cameras that I can switch to,
right. That
I can take anywhere in the world and just kind of pop it up and have a little event. And I think these are the kind of cameras, now that they're doing the live outputs, the older GoPros and a lot of the early ones didn't have that live HDMI output that these little guys do. So it's exciting.
Have you gone over to see the 4D, the D4 rather?
I did.
The Nikon? Did you two, our friend?
Yeah, it was high on my list.
I'm a Canon user, and I still was like, I had a conflict with my religion. Looking at it, I was, well.
Well, didn't Scott Bourne do that? He sold all his Canon gear and moved to the Nikon.
I think he might have. I can't remember which direction.
No, he's a Nikon shooter because the advantage Nikon has for he shoots birds is speed of focus and
focus
the number of frames in burst mode. And this new D4 is like, oh my God, it's like...
The Canon's actually faster. It takes pictures faster, but the D4 is one of the best low light performance cameras.
204 ISO.
204,000.
It's so sensitive to light that... they had to make the buttons on the back self-illuminated so just so you could see what you were doing.
Yeah.
Because you can take pictures in that low level.
Cave.
Yes.
Well, and they solved something that Canon has. I don't understand why Canon hasn't fixed this, but Canon will not only compress the output of the camera through the HDMI out, but it also puts there's no way to get rid of the whole interface on the Canon.
You don't want that.
But they, because they always, it was always built as like a preview tool, and they just left it all in there. And no matter how many of us complain about it, you know, they leave it in there. What Nikon did is they now, you can record up to 30 minutes instead of 11 or 12 on the Canon, and it's an uncompressed 8-bit output that has no interface, so you can hook it to a Key Pro. Or some kind of external device.
It could be used as we use the cameras here.
Exactly.
As a studio camera or something.
It may or may not. Those big chips tend to overheat. So you may not be able to use it like an ENG type thing where you have it on all day. But for folks who are using it for interviews, for you know, that type of thing, which we use, that's why we have the 5Ds. I use them for still as a fun project. But the reason that I own 5Ds is just... to do interviews.
Well, as we continue our CES coverage over the next 4 days, we will, I'm sure, have some cameras come by, and I'm sure that Nikon D4 will be one of them that comes by. Now, this is something that I really wanted. This was created by Fidel, the guy who did the iPod. Wasn't it John Fidel? I can't remember his
Tony.
First name. Tony Fidel, that's right. And this is a new age thermostat, but I thought you couldn't get these. These have been sold out, right?
They were we're borrowing one from the booth, from their booth.
I really want this.
It is such.
So this is a smart thermostat that watches your usage.
Click on it. Just click on it, and then you get a whole interface.
Wow.
You can, and then with the schedule, you can sit there and
Wow, that's slick.
And then you just click on it, and then you can move it around. You can go ahead and hit it one more time. Now move it around. Now you can just roll it, and you should you can find the time.
That guy do two hands. I'm like Ginger Rogers. Yeah,
and then click on it again, and you can set the temperature.
Wow,
it's a really nice interface.
It's
gorgeous. It's the interface that you wish, you know,
you wish everyone would do. Right.
Yeah, this is how you're competitive, I think, in the next generation of all electronics.
Right. Yeah. All devices. Yeah.
And I think this is what Apple's really brought into the electronics field is we're not willing. You know, we're not going to take it anymore. You're not going to take bad interfaces and horrible little buttons and. You know, we're expecting to have an LCD and something that's intuitive. I picked this up last night at their booth and just started playing with it and immediately understood how it worked. Wow. Yeah. I still don't know how
I'm doing it backwards and I understand how it works. I just set the temperature.
Because it's inspired by the iPod, right? It's the same sort of click wheel idea.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
But also with a bit of sort of the modern day app type, you know, very, very, there's actually a lot of information in there that you can change.
I love the look of it. I want someone to have, I don't know, 3 Nests in their house for a few months.
Yeah.
And then tell me how many times their dog triggered it to turn on to 80 degrees or something when they actually weren't home. Because the whole idea is that it's it recognizes motion and it also starts to know your habits. But how do you make sure that it's not getting triggered for the wrong reasons?
Right.
Wrong sources,
But I think you can override a lot of those. You can override a lot of that. Yeah. You know, it definitely has a lot of that intelligence. A lot of that stuff can be kind of you can decide how much weight you want to give that.
Wow.
Now the other issue is it's not cheap. It's really expensive for a thermostat. You can. It goes on the wall. It can, in most cases, replace the existing thermostat.
Yep.
They have an app online that'll tell you if your wiring is appropriate to put a Nest.
And I believe you can interact with it then with your iPhone as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you can. So you have. I mean.
I was just going to ask that. That's really cool. Probably an iPad to adjust the temperature on your couch when you're watching a movie or something.
It's like, it's a little cold in here, you know, and there's not a lot of going up and figuring out. I mean, I don't even bother. I mean, I have some crazy Honeywell in my house, and I still don't understand.
Well, there's a lot of home automation stuff at the show here this year, and this is what you're saying earlier. You know, like a lot of it is compatible with iPads and iPhones and Androids, too. You know, they're looking at the smartphone, you know, to be able to control almost everything in your house. I was always really skeptical of the X11. Remember the old X11 days when and clap on, clap off?
Yeah, X10, you know? Yeah. And yours went to 11?
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he's British.
Yeah, X10. Wow, X11.
Right.
That's better. I want that one. This is what, $250?
Yeah, $249.
Yeah, a little pricey. I just reset it. I hope you don't mind.
That's fine.
It's restarting back in a bit. I like a thing that says back in a bit. It's kind
that's
of,
British.
It's a British thermostat. Yeah. Yeah. Is Tony British?
No, he's from the States.
I broke it. It no longer turns on. But I guess it's sleeping.
It might run out of battery too.
We had it. It's designed to be plugged in, but it has an internal battery that's kind of an emergency battery, and it may have just.
That is really neat. I want one of these badly. So are you going to be able to get some? You think? Oh, it's rebooting. That's what would happen. A thermostat that reboots.
I'm definitely getting one for my house.
Very cool. Hey, by the way, AnandTech is reporting that MSI is here at the show floor with a PC motherboard with Thunderbolt on it. That's the kind of thing we need to see more of.
I thought that Lenovo had a Thunderbolt option. I could have sworn that I saw some announcement that they were incorporating it, but I could be wrong.
You know, I mean, it's an Apple and Intel standard, so it's not like it's a foreign standard, but so was FireWire, and I think it...
Well, the same with USB. USB was Intel, and no one was using it until Apple made it standard across all of their devices.
Apple did too good a job, and everybody uses USB now, and nobody cares.
Well, same with AirPort as well. Wi-Fi? Orinoco, yeah. Well, the standard they chose Lucent's
chipset.
Orinoco, or whatever it was, and then that's why that became standard.
Boy, this is cool. It's doing something. I don't know what it is. It feels like a friendly, happy alien in my house.
Lenovo announced Thunderbolt support for its 14-inch Edge S430 laptop.
Wow. Well, good. So the fact that you're starting to see PCs use Thunderbolts, I think is very
And I think PC manufacturers are going to be more risk-averse. They're not going to add it until they see the components. And so now we're seeing a lot of the components. And I think that then the computers are going to start following. Yeah, I think Apple tends to lead the components, and PCs tend to follow the components.
It takes years, doesn't it, for it to happen, for it to build up. And this is probably why we're seeing the Thunderbolt now rather than a year ago. It's because there wasn't enough Thunderbolt devices for them to connect to. So everything has to reach a critical mass.
Right.
We are live from the CES, the Consumer Electronics X show in Las Vegas, Nevada, the 2012 edition. It's always fun to come here because there's lots of great toys. Not a lot of Apple presence. I don't think Apple's here in any way, but as always,
They're wandering around.
Oh, really? You've seen some people with a little Apple?
No, I haven't seen it. I know people at Apple, and so
are they stealth?
They're just walking around looking at everything.
They say they're playing AI.
They're just playing with stuff.
They like the toys, too, right?
Yeah.
So.
Who does it, right?
Yeah.
Who doesn't? And we will continue with our coverage in just a little bit. I'm so glad to have from Cult of Mac, Irfan Elijah, who writes for the Cult of Mac blog, as does Leander Kani, who founded Cult of Mac. He is the original cultist.
And Alex, thanks, Leo.
Well, Cult of Android shows that you are open to other ideas. I like that.
I think I should be getting a cult of Windows. Like, I watched Obama's keynote.
It's a cult now.
Yeah.
What did you think of that tweet chorus?
That was pretty fun.
That was bizarre.
I quite enjoyed it, but it was bizarre. But once after the initial shock, it was kind of funny.
It was so they hired a some church choir to come out, and they're going huh, they come out the stage. You can see it online.
And gospel tweets.
And then they're singing tweets. Hashtag Microsoft CES.
They were great singers. Those two ladies had really great voices.
But
is that really what you want to do? What you want to have people talking about the day after your last keynote at CES?
Touché.
The gospel tweet singers.
I don't know.
I think lack of focus is a general problem in Seattle.
They also had Ryan Seacrest, right?
Exactly.
Airpods from Seattle. Don't say that.
The best part about that tweet choir, I don't know if you saw, is they're very typical, like, church choir. And then right in the middle was a short, white, bald guy.
Yeah, I
and
saw
And I was
him.
Like, who's that guy in there? How do you sneak in there?
I forget. You guys can hear and see what I do? Oh, yeah, I think we have. But every time I go to the internet, I screw everything up, right? It should be better? All right, because I want to play this, and then we're going to do a commercial. I'll tell you what. Let me do the commercial, and then when I come back, that's what we call a tease in the business. The problem is in podcasting, people just fast forward right through the commercial. So you don't want to do two teases that are so good that people don't listen to the commercial. But we will be back, and we will play for you the tweet choir at last night's final keynote for Microsoft. Their last year at CES, their last booth. Wow. Times are changing. This used to be Microsoft's big show. But first, let's talk about Ford, whose big show it has been for the last couple of years. Ford's had a big presence. There's Ford automobiles everywhere. Last couple of years, Alan Mulally, the CEO of Ford, keynoted. He isn't doing that this year, but we will be talking to him at the Ford booth a little later on this afternoon, interviewing him. They also are showing off. It's interesting because at the same time as CES is going on here, the big Detroit Auto Show is going on today in Detroit.
And they're all there. What happened to
Ford's
all of our cars?
Here, which I think is very telling. Ford really thinks of itself in many ways as a consumer electronics company. So Alan's here. We'll be talking to him. I'm having dinner with him later tonight. They showed off the 2013 Fusion. They've got one out in the lobby. That is a nice car. I want the plug-in hybrid, 100 miles to the gallon. Anyway, one of the nice things about all the new Ford vehicles is, of course, we've talked about it before, Ford Sync, and this App Link feature. It's an API to the Ford Sync. The Sync is the thing in your car that you talk to the car, and it does things like navigate or plays music, makes phone calls, all without ever taking your hands off the wheel, your eyes off the road. You just press a button, it goes boom, and you say what you want. Well, now you can actually talk to your smartphone, and with apps that support the API, they will actually run and do things. For instance, Pandora is one of the first apps they've come out with. So you can talk to your phone. You can say, play my Pandora classic rock station. You can thumbs up and thumbs down, just as you would do on the smartphone interface. You can bookmark a song to buy it later. You've got full control of Pandora. They also have something called OpenBeak that will read tweets to you, read replies. They won't sing them like a choir yet.
That
sucks. I bet you they could.
They could if they wanted to.
They totally could. I think that would be a nice feature. They have Stitcher, Slacker, so you can listen to this show. You could say play, you know, download and play MacBreak Weekly, and it would do that. All without taking your hands off the wheel. I love that. If you have not yet taken a look at Sync, go to your local Ford dealer and drive one today. The 2012 Ford Fiesta has this feature. It's called App Link. You can find out more also online at Ford.com/technology.
Did you know who just got a Ford?
Who?
Frederick Johnson.
Frederick Van Johnson got a Ford, a good man.
He got. It was kind of, you know, he's been driving his Beamer forever, and
he went from a Beamer to a Ford.
And he got the Explorer. I think the Explorer, like the SUV, the Edge.
The Edge is the high tech
one.
A lot of photographers like the Edge because it's really made for. Like,
well, it just walks up to the back and just has a little button.
And of course
Frederick got it loaded.
Yeah.
Like it's just smart.
It is,
you know. And I have to. It's a gorgeous car.
I know you're a Honda guy. You and I, we're going to walk over. We're going to look at that Fiesta, the 2013.
I don't know if I can.
Not Fiesta, Fusion.
I'd love to.
Awesome. It's hybrid or hybrid plug-in?
Is it a hybrid plug-in?
Yes.
Okay, I'll go over.
See, that's what you want because then you have the range because it's got an engine. But because it's plug-in, you also have full battery capability.
Right.
And you very rarely use gas.
We'll go over.
That's why the 100 miles a gallon doesn't really mean anything because it could be 1,000.
Right.
Just depends how you drive. All right, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you, Ford, for supporting our coverage, by the way, of CES 2012. We really appreciate it.
Really quickly.
Yes.
Alex was saying that you've recognized some Apple guys who are here. Tom Krasnick over at Paid Content just wrote an article. While wandering around the central hall of the Las Vegas Convention Center, I bumped into Greg Joswiak, head of Iowa's product marketing for Apple, just outside Sony's booth.
Uh-huh.
He said he was interested in how other companies present their products at events such as CES. He seemed less than impressed with Sony's booth, but didn't really want to get into a lengthy discussion, and his badge was strategically arranged as to cover his name and company affiliation.
He's hiding out.
But
you
he's here.
I'll tell you the one you want to see is if you come in the front door of the central hall, that big LG 3D display, it is like three stories tall. It's huge. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Immersive. And I'm not a big 3D fan, but it really is amazing. It's really cool. All right. This was last night, Steve Ballmer's last keynote. He's sitting on stage with, what's his name, Ryan Seacrest. I don't know. You think maybe American Idol might be looking at Ballmer for a judge or something like that? I don't know. Here, let's watch. Can you pick it up? Oh, you're not getting audio, are you? You know, it really is no good if you don't get audio. I'm not doing anything different. We should be getting audio. Maybe there's audio on this. Here, hold on. Time out. Let me make sure everything is set up properly. We'll just edit this part out. No one will know what happened. Yeah, HDMI. I was getting audio before when I did this. Try it again. You guys listening? Yeah, I hear it now.
Oh, there you go. Yay.
Yeah, there's a little guy in the back. They really
there
they put him in the back so you don't see him. There's just a little bald white head there.
Everyone can go ahead and watch the LSU Bama game. I watch the Microsoft CES keynote. Hashtag nerd alert.
I'm wondering where they're getting these. Are they? I mean, these seem like they're live.
I think they were doing them real time.
Are they reading them off a screen?
They were reading them off
a screen. That's pretty impressive.
Ryan Seacrest is hosting this Microsoft keynote. This man is not every
I don't know. I mean, yeah, they have wonderful voices. I just think this is a very weird pairing.
It's hard to make a keynote interesting.
I guess.
This automated
this lady.
Is hilarious.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Hey. Somebody call Eddie Murphy.
This is the best one.
Studio Hall. Nokia Lumia 900 is coming to America. And it's about.
Las Vegas Mass Choir, the Tweet Choir at the Microsoft Steve Ballmer keynote last night.
It just they keep saying the same four words over and over.
Yeah.
Microsoft CES keynote hashtag.
I'm sorry. You can't give Windows 8 soul. You can sing it, but you can't give Windows 8 soul. I did say we saw the Nokia N900 or the Lumia 900 they're calling it just a minute ago, and it is nice.
Right.
I have to say, it's going to give the iPhone and the Android phones a run for their money.
Yeah, yeah, I know a lot of people who are holding off for this one. Like a buddy of mine at a big tech site. Is holding out for this. Yeah. He's dumping his Android phone for it.
It will be a challenger, and I think that's great. We want to see competition, and who knew that Windows Phone 7 would come out of nowhere and actually be a fairly credible platform.
It's going to make it a really interesting three-horse race.
That's what we want.
And it's like, Google's kind of like the new Microsoft, you know, a little bit. They'll
clueless,
put it on
big,
any handset, and it goes from junk to really good stuff.
Right.
And now, sort of, Microsoft's the new Apple. In a way, because I thought
they're
that
was controlling
really,
it.
Yeah, and it's a coherent interface across a whole bunch of different devices. Like the Xbox, almost works just like a Windows 8.
And Windows 8 will that Metro interface will even be on the desktop, which is interesting. What do you think about the Kinect for the desktop? They're gonna offer a $250 special Kinect that lets you work close in. You'll have voice control and motion control with Windows, so you'll be going like this to the Metro desktop. I don't know.
I haven't actually used the Kinect on the Xbox.
It's awesome.
It works?
Yeah.
Does it consistently work all the time?
She loves it.
Dance Central
awesome.
Is the best thing in the world.
I have a video
it's like
for
one of
that
the best
too.
Uses of Kinect ever, even though it's not the only one, and it works so well.
It's fun because you dance, it sees your outline. You were dancing, I saw a video of you dancing with two, because the new Dance Central 2 has two two players.
And the woman I was competing against was a lot taller, but they can differentiate between the two of us, and we're competing together.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a lot of fun. But, I mean, I don't use a desktop setup that often because I'm just portable and I've got this Air and a couple other laptops. So it'll be interesting to see what something like that works on in an environment where I'm not just sitting at a desk this far back. I have to be on the go with gesture-based controls.
The thing about this is it's something that Microsoft has that Apple does not have, that nobody else has. So it's an opportunity for them to stand out a little bit. Whether it's a useful thing, remains to be seen.
The voice, too. They showed the voice on the Xbox, and that worked really well.
It does, yeah.
And if it'll be interesting to see if Siri comes.
We're going to see voice everywhere.
Well, did you see Dragon? Yeah. Dragon is now showing their TV interaction software or technology. So that you can just say play, go to this channel, and they don't have any partners yet. They were just showing it off as a technology example right now. But I think obviously they are going to.
There's no one else,
and they can give you a lot, a much more open door of letting you have be able to say a lot more,
right?
Because they have such a deep vocabulary,
right? Mm. Right. Well, okay, let's go through the panel and just say anything that we've left out or that you're interested or excited to see. Leander Kani, Cult of Mac, anything coming up that you're...
Well, the first thing you said was, like, this is not an Apple show, really, and...
I guess we found a few things.
Yeah, exactly. These days, it was only even just a couple, 3-4 years ago, there would be a lot of stuff that wouldn't work with Apple devices, either the iPhone or the Mac, and now these days, everything works with Apple. No one can release a product if it's not compatible with your iPhone or your iPad.
That's
they're not
very
in the market.
Good point. That is a huge shift, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, I think it's a massive shift.
Yeah. How about you? I know you're going to be over at the cameras. That's going to be fun for you.
I'm going to go see if there's anything new. I'll be interested to see what happens there.
I know that Sarah Lane, we're going to be going over on Thursday to do iPad Today at the iLounge.
We did.
I can't wait to see all this stuff over there.
Last year we also spent some time, because last year was the big Android tablet, everyone's going to crush the iPad, or at least they had a lot of ideas.
Right.
I don't know if we're that interested.
Should we look
in
at Windows 8 stuff?
Well, I think it's worth a few competitors.
I agree. Let's see what else is going on.
Asus has got a new one based on a Tegra 3 chip. Mm-hmm. It's only $250. Which
Android?
And Ice Cream Sandwich.
All right. I'm willing to look at that.
It's the lowest price point we've seen.
That's pretty interesting.
Right. And it's only $50 more than the Kindle Fire.
Wow.
But a lot more powerful.
Wow.
So that looks kind of interesting.
That's interesting, yeah. Anything else you're looking forward to finding on the show floor? 3D TVs. You going to buy a new TV?
I'm not crazy about the 3D thing.
Yeah.
I am interested in gesture controls, and certainly that OLED stuff is just it's a couple years down
beautiful.
The road. But I'm really excited about where we're all going.
Yeah.
And of course, iPad 3 cases, because they're going to be there.
Over in the China Pavilion, somebody will be making iPad 3 cases. We also thank you, Irfan Elijah, for joining us. What are you excited about seeing?
I haven't seen a ton yet, but I think one of the things that I was really happy to see, I'm from Redmond, Washington. I live in Seattle now, and I'm an Apple fan, admittedly.
You're the one.
I am one of the people who really love that company. But it was really cool for me to go to that Apple keynote and see people who were genuinely excited.
The Microsoft keynote.
The Microsoft keynote. And see people that were genuinely excited that Microsoft is releasing some new products, because they've been doing kind of a lot of ho-hum things for quite a while. So it was cool to see them kind of get their spark back, get their groove back, if you will.
Next week, Alex, Lindsay, I have an assignment for you and Andy Iannocco. There's two things we didn't talk about this week that I very much want to talk about. One was an article in Slashdot today saying that the Indian government, it was a leaked memo by the Indian government that said that Apple, along with BlackBerry and other phone, Nokia, I think the other phone manufacturers, was allowing them a back door to encryption on the phone. That is a very interesting accusation. We'll see over the next week if that develops
into
anything. And then I want everybody to listen to this week's This American Life show because they talk about Foxconn and do, a really, really good job of...
I think you can stop there. This American Life?
Yeah,
does a
great
really,
show.
Really. It is.
Well, they're
one
getting
the
more journalistic, which is interesting. So, Mike Daisy, who's a friend of mine I've known for years, he's a monologist up in the near Seattle area. As a matter of fact, he is an Apple fan, and he said, "I was an Apple fan. Somebody sent me pictures of the Foxconn factory, and I had to say, wow. And I went to see for myself. So it starts with Mike Daisy and his tour of the Foxconn factory and some of the conditions there. But then the second half of the show is their investigation of these accusations, allegations. And it is a must listen to anybody, not just who buys Apple gear, but buys any gear these days, because all of the stuff on this show floor is made in those factories. And I think if we're going to buy it, we ought to know where it comes from. So your assignment, boys and girls, for this week is to listen to Mr. Daisy in the Apple factory. You can find it. It's free at thisamericanlife.org. It's about an hour long. And then we'll discuss next week. How about that? We'll have a little discussion group next week about that. I thank you for joining us. We are here at CES 2012, and we are going to continue with wall-to-wall coverage all day today through Friday. Lots of great stuff still to come, including tonight, Sarah and Dick DiBartolo. Thank you for doing this for me.
You're welcome.
We'll do the weekly Daily GizWiz from Showstoppers.
Yeah, we're going to go over to the Wynn and see what we can see what we can drum up.
Dickie D's in town. And we're going to have the Daily GizWiz from Showstoppers later today. Stay tuned. More to come from CES. If you like the show, I hope you will tune in. We do the show every Tuesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern at twit.tv. And, of course, you subscribe on iTunes or, I use Downcast on the iOS devices. I love it. What's that iPod catcher that you really liked? It wasn't Downcast. You found another one that you really
Instacast.
Liked. Instacast.
Instacast.
That's right.
Was the first to incorporate iCloud.
Right.
Syncing.
Right.
Downcast now does it too, but Instacast has a really nice interface.
So subscribe, because we love it if you get every single show. We don't want you to miss a one. Thanks for joining us. Now get back to work. Break time is over.